So, had a rainy preseason game. A lot of folks, unfortunately, with fears of the weather, weren't able to make it. But our trusty listener, Brandon Dean, on the supporter group channel, said he couldn't wait for us Soccer Chat boys to tell him what the players look like. So Adam and I were able to make it. Adam, are you ready to tell Brandon what they look like?
Yeah, I mean, I think I've wrote a lot of notes to make sure I got it accurate, so I think I'm ready.
Okay, so what do they look like?
Well, I'll start with a returning player. His name's Jonathan Ricketts. He's kind of a tall, dark-headed, young guy.
Uh-huh. Yeah, they had the new player Juan Galindres, and he was, you know, kind of big, and had this really nice dark hair, good haircut, good looking haircut, and these awesome brown eyes that just look right through you.
Eat your heart out, Alexi. Look at this. In off the post.
And it's off the post. And it came off both posts and came out. Are you kidding? Unbelievable.
All right, everyone. Welcome to, we'll kind of call this the first off the post of the season. Off the post, of course, is our quick and punchy initial reactions to games. You'll get those, you know, the day of or the day after a lot of these matches. But since we're going to be playing under the lights now and the games aren't going to be done till like 9:30, 10 o'clock, you should expect us old men to record that the next day in the morning as opposed to late at night. But we're going to basically do this one. Oh, before we do any of that, hey, Adam, did you see? Did you see who's played 90 minutes twice in a row and not had an injury?
Yeah.
Oh, and by the way, he scored two goals. Did you see that?
I'm going to be honest with you. I was pretty impressed. I think they're doing a good job of getting him out and having him be seen so that they can get him back to Germany. So good for them.
Nice. Alex's stone cold prediction machine. We just had a big day with a win against Porto. We're going on to the Champions League semifinals. Champions League, Adam, you may not be familiar. It's the teams that finish towards the top of the table. They play each other in a tournament with, you know, it's got like the best teams in all of these European leagues that go against each other. So they're going to the semifinals, and you've got that. You've got an upcoming semifinal in the FA Cup. So there's roughly 10 games left. My prediction, Christian Pulisic right now sitting on 4 goals. He'll have 10 by the end of the year.
Oh, it's not a bad prediction. I'm going to say this. I hope for your guys' sake that you win Champions League because I don't think you're finishing in the top four, so you get to experience Europa next year. Yeah. So, yeah, there's that.
That was nice. All right. That was nice. Yeah.
So moving on, we're going to do an Ask Us Anything, and Jeff is just going to pick our brains about what we saw in Saturday's preseason match, a 1-0 victory by the Red Wolves against Atlanta United 2. Jeff, take it away.
All right. So when you first get to a stadium, especially with CHI Memorial, knowing that it's a continuing work in progress. So on the outside, before you get into the stadium, was there anything different from the outside as you came up to the stadium? Paint that picture for me.
Yeah. So think of the way the stadium looked last year. And so all that grassed area in front of the stadium, the vast majority of the grass is gone and been replaced with steel beams.
Ah.
And so you can kind of see the framework through the steel of what those buildings will look like. And then there's still a ridiculous amount of steel all around where you can tell that's additional framing that it's going to have to go up. I'm wondering if some of that framing is also for the overhang that's supposed to go over those seats as well. So that'll be interesting to see if that comes out of that as well. But yeah, I mean, you could tell there's definitely a lot of steel work that's been done, which creates the foundation. A lot of times with those type of steel buildings, that's the slowest part. But I think it's a fair and safe statement to say that's they would be lucky to have that any of that open this year. mm-hmm. based off of where they're at. But yeah, you can definitely tell the progress has been there, but it's definitely been slow going.
So that's going to be where the box suites are going to be and some other stuff up there, correct?
Yeah, and I was looking at that with super fan Kay Baker, who sits in that nice highfalutin dollar section, and we're trying to figure out exactly how that's going to work. I think the way it'll attach to the actual stadium is the windows will come right up to the stadium, and they'll just have one singular walkway into that area from the way it looks. But yeah, you can tell all those are going to be right on top of where the seats are. So those suites will be nice. And then I think inside there also is where that's where the restaurant and such is going to be for the executive club and all that good stuff. So yeah, I mean, you can see progress, which is great.
Okay, very good. Now, was there any changes on the other stand where the supporter stand is?
No, there's not really been any changes over there. They still have kind of the looks like a tractor trailer kind of, you know, tiny house where they have the announcer and all of those folks sit to watch the matches.
Right.
So they've got that set there. You can see at the end behind the goal that's opened in the horseshoe, you mm-hmm. can see the base, you know, the real heavy beam base that is going to be the Jumbotron. We're going to have to start doing some video things, guys, so we can get ourselves on the Jumbotron. Obviously there's going to be Kiss Cam, and I'm sure our wives, Adam, would prefer we kiss each other than kiss them on the Kiss Cam.
Seems fair.
So they've got the Jumbotron ready. They were telling us about the conduits for the lights. So everything that's going to wire into the lights that will be set up by the time they kick off on May 22nd has been run. I have never built a professional soccer stadium. I did help my son complete a Lego fire station.
Oh, well,
so I believe that really qualifies me to be at least as much of an expert as the people from other places in League One who also have never built soccer stadiums.
I think our issue is that they're used to everything being based off baseball stadiums, and they think that you know, if you can transform a baseball stadium into a soccer stadium in seconds, why can't you do the same with completely undeveloped land?
Right.
There you go.
I also want to mention that the supporter section, they had installed for the most part, I don't think they were done installing, but they were in the process of installing safe standing seating over there. That okay. has like the standing bar and has the seats that flip up and fold flat so you can fully stand and sit if you need to for any reasons. And that looked really cool. It wasn't open because it was still in process of being, you know, completely built out. You could tell they still probably had two rows still to go, but that was exciting to see. That's going to hopefully eventually be a very full section. And the safe standing is a genius way to do that, as opposed to just expecting people to stand in front of seats that don't really give you the room to fully stand. It's a much better setup for those that want to stand throughout the whole time. There's a lot more room than even you get in general admission. So that's really cool to see.
And if you need to take a break, like you're an old, person, you can. So I think it's the best of both worlds. So there you go. I like it. So, all right. So now actually talking about the game. So I understood that there was it was almost like two different teams on each half. So going to the first half, who do we know that was on the field? Because there was a lot of people who were trying out with the team. So was the first half mostly our existing team?
So the impressions for me, and it just comes down to basically with COVID, not being able to have a lot of the same preseason events of things. You know, last year we had some of the supporters got together and welcomed the guys at the airport as they were arriving. We obviously weren't able to do that this year. That was before everything shut down. The first season they had that awesome event at downtown where the players were just kind of sitting and anyone could come and sit and talk with them and meet them so that you could put faces with names. And we just haven't had that ability this year. So I'm fairly certain the back line was everyone you would know. It had Daniel Navarro, basically taking the place of Leo Falla. Other than that, it's the back line anyone had come to expect. In the midfield, I am pretty sure that it was Jose Carrera Garcia and Jimmy Villalobos playing with Ro Pineda.
Oh, okay.
Those are two guys that I'm not completely sure because we weren't able to put faces with names. And in team photos, they apparently haven't had picture day at the Red Wolves. Coach Jimmy's a little busy trying to implement all of his stuff. So they didn't have photos on the team website for me to be able to try to kind of piece that together. But the front line, of course, was Markey. It was Juan Galindres, the Colombian striker that they signed this year, and Rafa Mensigan, who also was out there. And I was really impressed with the speed of our attack. Almost sometimes felt like we were playing with four forwards as Jimmy Villalobos, unless it was Carrera Garcia. And if I get it completely wrong, everyone, please forgive me. But they were pushing forward in that first half. These were the guys who are going to be the team. They gave them a good half to get out there and run around and play hard. And the biggest thing that struck me was just last year, you would hear Coach Jimmy encouraging guys to press up on the defense. And this year, there was not the same kind of hesitation of pressing people. And it created a couple opportunities. Through that press, they were able to force a couple of bad passes that gave them opportunities to score, and they weren't able to put any of them away.
Wow. So you had talked that the whole front line was super fast. So are you saying that they, Rafi, and then the forward was
Juan Galindres.
So there again,
his name's not Jose, is it? Someone can check me on that later.
I think it is Juan. Doofus. Yeah. Okay. I think it is Juan. So were they going Markey speed?
Yes, they were Markey speed.
Oh yeah. My gosh. So you've got three Markeys up front. And as far as for pace.
Well, and considering, Juan Galindres probably has a good foot of height on Markey Hernandez. And I'm not trying to make, Brandon Dean short joke about Markey. But Juan Galindres was significantly taller, but he did have that speed. And so to have, a good-sized guy who's going to be in the center as a target for crosses, but also is able to track down those long balls, it was a very exciting prospect.
Wow. That's going to be, and then you've got Ricky and Ricketts coming from the side, and they are very fast as well. That sounds like we could. So, did you see them moving the ball up from the back to the front without any problem, or were there some things getting held up?
No, I would say they were moving the ball really well. I think the passes were there, people were moving to the right spot. I think I have to take it with a bit of a grain of salt, as Coach kind of mentioned. I think I read it in the Red Wolves release about the actual game. They've only been together for a week, right? So they're still learning each other. So there were definitely some passes that were either slightly behind a quick runner or slightly ahead of a slightly slower runner as they were learning each other's speed. But ultimately, back to front, they were able to move the ball around. They found the midfielders at the right time. I was really, I was really impressed with how well our first touches were from Juan and from Rafa, just not letting the ball get away and immediately finding that next guy to take the ball to. There wasn't a lot of forcing the ball through. Overall, the first half, they looked really good, especially when you add into it, they've only been playing together for a little over a week.
So who was taking the corners?
So this is actually going to point out something. I'm going to bring up something that did worry me a little bit. So Rafa was taking the corners from the right-footed side, where you would be bending a right foot from outside to inside towards the goal. And at the very end of the half, he actually looked like he may have tweaked his hammy a little bit while taking one of those. It was a big deal. He walked off on his own, but. That's the only thing that, we talk about these early games. So you don't want to overexert yourself too much. And I think it's hard to do. It's hard to turn it off in a game, which I think is partly why you saw a completely different team in the second half, because the coach didn't want to put them in that position. But yeah, I know at least on the side that the fans are on, which would be what I would consider the right side, because they were going towards the goal that the supporters section is at, Rafa was taking those. I don't know if someone else was taking it from the other. Do you, Alex?
I honestly don't remember.
Yeah.
Okay. I was just kind of curious. Now, you'd mentioned that David was there in Leo's spot. And, of course, Tim Trilk was the keeper in the first half. So this is the first chance to really see Tim in a game. How did he do?
I thought he did well there that first half, again, because of the pressure that they applied. They had most of the possession. They had most of it in their attacking end, so there was not a whole lot that was asked of Tim Trilk in that first half.
Yeah, there was like one set piece that really they got a good shot on, and he took care of it. In all honesty, if you're talking which keeper was really impressive, Sebastian Moramora in the second half really showed his quickness and his ability to, you know, kind of see what was going to be happening. At the same time, so he had a little bit of Alex Mangles in him in that he would pull up almost to midfield. I kept saying, like, oh, if the Atlanta United two guys would look up, they could just chip it over his head. But I thought Moramora was really impressive. Now, that said, at that point, the defender was on the supporter's side, so that we got to see the keeper a little bit better from where I was sitting. So, you know, Trilk may have been doing just as well on the other side, but he was much further away, so I didn't have the best insight on that.
Well, and Moramora was, I mean, he actually had to come up with a couple of saves off of, I don't know if they were set pieces, but headed crosses that got on goal. So he had to actually stretch and make a couple saves, which he did easily. Held the ball. There wasn't a parry. He actually was able to grab it and prevent a rebound. So it was really impressive to see that quickness there. So we'll have to see. You know, I think we're used to the way that it was when we were coming up playing goalkeeper, when the goalkeeper was, you know, he was deliberately excluded as if he was the kicker on a football team. And so they didn't want us wandering too far from goal. But nowadays it seems they want the keeper to be able to play with his feet. And so Sebastian Moramora not afraid when the play got pushed up to the attacking end to venture out of his box and try to close that gap from a breakaway.
Yeah.
All right. So talk to me about Kavar. How did he do compared to Leo, or how did he connect well with the rest of the back line?
So it's going to be really hard to gauge much on the defense, because honestly, I would say that first half, at least 60% of it was in Atlanta United 2's half. And I'd say another 20% was in the midfield. Less than 20% was in our half. And so because of that, you didn't get to see a ton, but, you know, he looked good with his feet. You know, he's an experienced guy, so I expected him to do that, but it's hard to tell. I mean, like, honestly, the only thing that those defenders really did was provide assistance on the attack, in my opinion.
Yeah, because I know that since Daniel was here last time, I don't think there's anyone in the back line who was there when he was here the first time. So I was kind of curious on that. So,
well, he's played an equal number of games with these guys as he did with the ones when he came the first time.
Yeah.
I think he looked pretty good. He fit in well. And I would agree with what Adam said. One of the other things I noticed here is, you know, most of the stuff that Coach Jimmy talked about was the attitude and the mentality. A lot of times, again, where you would hear him imploring the players in the back as they're moving the ball side to side to try to push it up and try to, you know, try to get through the lines and get it forward. And they were doing that. You saw a lot more vertical passes from the defenders as opposed to just side to side trying to basically rock the other team to sleep. They were looking for those opportunities and making those passes to get the ball forward.
All right. So the second half, you was there anyone that played both halves?
Jason Ramos.
Okay. Wow. Okay. So good old dependable Ramos. So everything else was swapped around. So who was the standout and who did you see on the second? And I understand you didn't recognize everybody because they're not necessarily people who've made the team yet.
So there was one that looked familiar that folks are telling me was a trialist from Young Harris. And the reason that I recognize him is because he was coaching someone against my son's club team.
Well, didn't we watch, I think we watched Young Harris play him in a preseason last year. So maybe he was there too.
Yes, could have been. But he played well while he was out there. A lot of the others, I'm not sure that I remember. And that second half, it was hard to say that there was really anyone that stood out. Of course, there's Facundo Coelho, who was the goal scorer off of a good header off of a cross. But aside from that header, he didn't do much that stood out besides kind of wear pink shoes. Adam, would you agree?
Yeah, I mean, we didn't know anyone's name, and I was like, we need to find out who Pinky is because he scored the goal. That's all I knew. Like, he had pink shoes, like, because we didn't have any names for him. He was a trialist. I would say, you know, Christian Zaragoza, you know, held his own as a 17-year-old in the field.
Okay, so he did play. So that's good to hear.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's good to get some experience there. So, you know, it's not an official game, but, you know, the coach, you know, said, you know, I'm going to get the quote that's actually in the Red Bulls article. You know, he said, he's going to make a professional debut at some point in this season. He's a good player, and he's our type of player. It's in his DNA. He's a Red Wolf, and he understands what it means to wear this badge. Like, Jimmy Obleda doesn't just give away compliments like that. Like, that's just not in his nature. He's a pretty straight shooter, and so that says a lot about the 17-year-old and the impression that he's made in that short amount of time. And I think he's been practicing with the team prior to them actually, you know, giving him the contract. Obviously, they're going to want him out there to see what he can do. So I think he's done a lot in that time frame to show what he can do. And like I said, he held his own. Like, it wasn't like he stood out, but he definitely held his own. There was never a time where you thought, oh, they're going to go towards the kid in the back.
That's not he didn't stand out to where someone was like, oh goodness, there's some 17-year-old kid out there. You know, he fit in with the rest of the team, you know, accomplished what they were all wanting to accomplish. And so he looked like someone that belonged out there on that field with the other professional players.
Okay, very good. So so if I'm getting the sense from you guys, is the first half where either our current team and or those who have been established in a level like League One, and in the second half where either newer people coming in or people trying out or someone stepping up to League One, so they probably haven't had as much time to gel yet.
Yeah, I would say a lot of these guys, and I mean, really, it's what we were told from Coach Jimmy Obleda. A lot of the guys in the second half were guys that had come as trialists. They're trying to make the last few roster spots that are probably guys who are not necessarily expecting to have a lot of playing time, but have an opportunity to continue to be part of the game and you know, maybe have a chance to make an impact in practice and step up if someone was to be injured. So that's who that was, and a lot of them are players that we didn't recognize. And, you know, the quality of the game just kind of dropped off. You could tell maybe some of the Atlanta United players were a little tired. And these guys, you could tell they were ones who were fighting for a roster spot as opposed to kind of the big-time signings that the Red Wolves brought in to up the level of the team.
Of course, we'll find out when it's all said and done, but part of me is kind of wondering if some of these trialists will end up either at Dalton or Park City if they don't make the first team. But hopefully we'll get a few more because we're already – I think we're going to have a larger roster than we've had for the past 2 years. And having gone through, especially last year, where we kept running into a lot of the injury issues, do you think having that thicker roster is going to be a big help for us?
Yeah, I think so. It definitely feels a lot like we're not as worried about the injuries and things that we had. We've got guys that are going to fill. We've got the ability to do full-sided scrimmages and things like that that I think will help them work on stuff that they want to work on. So I think the number of players that they have, the quantity, as well as some of the quality that we got to see from the new guys that they've signed in the first half, puts me in a pretty, I feel pretty good about where we're sitting so far in the preseason.
So is there a player that you were kind of on the fence about going into as far as for reading their background that maybe they changed your mind watching, or is it just too hard to tell on just a scrimmage?
Feel like from the few things I saw, I am ready to be full on Rafa Stan. And I think a lot of other people felt the same way.
Yeah, I wasn't really on the fence on Rafa. I mean, everything you heard from the Lansing fans, rest in peace, Lansing. was positive about him. I don't think he really got much of an opportunity in Memphis. You know, COVID probably didn't help that for him and getting, you know, a chance to really shine. But I think he showed really well. I was really, you know, it's, I wouldn't say I was hesitant on anyone just because of the fact I didn't know a lot about them, but I will say, I was really impressed with how our midfield held up. I think, you know, Wally and Ami are still big parts of our plans, but they're also both still recovering from injury. And so that's that, how well, the, you know, Jimmy, Jose and Josue, handle themselves in the middle as Ami and Wally come back, it's going to be really important. And I thought they handled themselves really well.
Okay. So out of those midfielders, cause I was going to comment that Ami wasn't playing and Wally wasn't playing. So who of those new midfielders do you think stood out to be the playmaker?
Well, part of that would be us properly identifying who it was we were watching, which I am fairly sure that it was Jimmy Villalobos. And he stood out, and he was kind of the more moving forward. And I think Jose Carrera was playing more of the, like, kind of a six. But he was really seemed to be hanging back, pulling the strings while Villalobos was pushing up, trying to help break down the defense along with the forwards. And of course Rowe was in there as well. And he really seemed to be, assisting in moving forward. So it was hard to tell who was really pulling the strings from my perspective.
Yeah, those practice jerseys, the numbers on them are very small. There's nothing on the back. So it's really hard to tell without like having that. Like if it was Wally or Ami out there, we would know, right? Because we recognize them, we know them. But this being literally the first time we're seeing them outside of like a picture that was put on a press release, it's almost impossible from that distance to be able to tell who they are. It was almost hard to tell who Rowe was because he doesn't have his, you know, his hair anymore that he had at the beginning of last season. And it took me a second when Alex was like, "Rowe's looking good." I was like, "That's who that is." I knew he looked familiar, and then it just clicked for me. So yeah, it's hard to make that determination.
So I assume that the really small letters and the inability to identify players is part of the Daniel Navarro protocol while he's in witness protection. So
that seems reasonable.
Yeah, I would say that's cool. a fair assessment.
So I know it was only season ticket holders like ourselves, and not all of us made it out for a variety of reasons. Weather played into it for me, but for those who came, how was the enthusiasm from the supporters, and what was the feedback you got from fellow supporters about the match?
Yeah, so I got it. Like I mentioned earlier, I talked to Superfan Kay Baker. She had, as always, she had her cowbells with her and such. But it was gross conditions. It was between spitting and pouring rain. It was sideways, windy rain, which just doesn't make it the best situation. And then you don't really know everybody out there, so it makes it kind of hard to get super super loud and excited. But the people I talked to were glad to finally be back in the stadium. And I think, you know, as we go forward and start looking towards where we can start to have some tailgates and start to kind of build that back up, I think it's going to be very helpful. But yeah, I mean, it's a preseason game in the rain. There wasn't a lot of excitement.
Yes. No, and I think the success, I think the way they looked in the first half with most of the first team players playing very well, having the majority of the play, you know, feeling like they were dominating the game, that made it a lot of fun and led to a lot of excitement. And so, you know, the team itself did a lot to try to temper expectations and, you know, try to let people know this is really early. This is our first preseason game. But we're so excited to have you guys here. And pretty much all the rest of their preseason games are going to be away because of construction that's going to be going on at the stadium. So, you know, I came away from it feeling very excited and feeling very positive about how the season was going to go.
All right. So watching them being much more front foot focused, say that three times fast. And so which teams in USL League One do you think we're going to match up with really well with this new style or this improvement of our style?
I'm not afraid to play anyone in the league. Now, I'm not going to guarantee that we, you know, are going to go undefeated, but I feel like with what we've got, we would be able, you know, two tight losses last year to Greenville, who's reloaded and brought back a lot of their roster. I feel like these guys are going to be able to play with them as well as anyone else in the league.
I would agree with that 100%.
Wow. So is that, that's about all I've got for this preseason. But looking at the league this year, I know it's never too early to make wild predictions.
Yeah, so the league just put out their playoff format. We've got a 12-team league. The top six are going to qualify for the playoffs. We'll have the 3 through 6 playing in basically like play-in games, and then going to semifinals against the first and second place teams, games hosted by the higher seeded teams. They put out a whole bunch of their tiebreaker stuff. The big one to remember, if teams are tied on points, the first thing they look at is overall wins. So everyone should keep that in mind when they're trying to make a distinction between where people are. So yeah, what do you guys think we're going to have in terms of playoffs?
So, you know, nothing like a good way too early predictor, but it is 6 teams that are getting in, which I think is, you know, a big deal. It's a very large opportunity for, you know, a team that may catch fire the second half of the season to not get too far behind. So I'm super excited about that. When I look at the teams, I think it's safe to say Greenville and Omaha are going to be in the top 6. I think that's a safe statement.
Yeah.
From there, I think Richmond and South Georgia have a pretty good chance. I would then throw us and FC Tucson as my next two in the 5th and 6th spot. I think FC Tucson is going to surprise some people. And it's not just my dislike for Ford Madison that says that. I just don't think they've done enough this offseason to improve themselves. So those are my 6.
See, I've almost got the same lineup, but I actually am seeing Madison instead of Tucson, even though I'm from Arizona. But we're going to see what's going to happen with Madison. Of course, once it gets going, we're going to get a better picture. But you're spot on with Greenville. They are the favorites going into it. Omaha, as much of a chagrin, they do have a solid team. Let's see how they do with a solid schedule. Definitely Richmond and us. Tormenta is just continuing to build steam. And so we'll see if it's Madison or Tucson for that other spot.
So way too early. Alex's stone cold prediction machine making a second appearance. I believe the Chattanooga Red Wolves are going to host a playoff game this year. You guys save the date.
Okay.
Be prepared to tailgate in semi-chilly weather, because come November, someone's coming to CHI Memorial for a playoff game. That's my prediction. I think Greenville's going to finish at the top. I would have us somewhere in that 2nd through 4th, along with Omaha, and I'm going to say North Texas.
Huh. Okay.
They have a team both, you know, last season, they're ones who finished very strong at the end of the year, and the fact that they'll have more time to turn that run into trying to finish and be in a playoff position, I think is going to work for them. And then the final two in, I think, is going to be Richmond and North Texas. Not, I already said North Texas, sorry. The other two that are going to be in are Richmond and FC Tucson. I think Adam is right. FC Tucson's going to surprise some people, and I see them making their way into the playoff this year.
Hmm. Well, obviously, these predictions have to be spot on without seeing any, only watching one match that we fell asleep watching. That we watched on Saturday night.
That is very true. Congrats to New England.
Yes.
On a 1-0 victory in the inaugural game of the season. And we'll have, I believe it's New England 2 again taking on Richmond this weekend. So be looking for that. And we'll get a chance to see what Richmond Kickers might be all about.
So I'm going to throw you guys for a loop real quick on this prediction for the season. I know we predicted playoffs. I want you each to pick one team that you think is going to be the team that everyone circles on their calendar as this is the team that we will get back on track with because they're so terrible.
Fort Lauderdale. I guess it's I'm also being influenced by the ghost of Orlando past that maybe it's just thinking about the Florida team. It's a beautiful stadium, but their priorities clearly is supporting their MLS team and not their League One team. So I got to say Fort Lauderdale Club de Football.
I'm going to say a year's absence from the league, Toronto FC 2, T2 Rise of the Machines or whatever it is. I think they're going to be at the bottom.
So what's interesting here is we got three different teams. And so I'm going to go against myself from a podcast early in the year. I'm actually now going to go with North Carolina FC. And here's my reasoning for that. They have signed 15 Academy kids. And if you look at the previews that the League One put out today, it's kind of an overview of like, you know, who came in, who left. And you click on North Carolina FC and they've like had like a number to focus on for each team. They focus on that 15 players, which doesn't seem like a big deal until you realize their statement is that relying on long-term pros like Nazi, Robbie, and others to help North Carolina FC find the right balance of youth and experience to be successful, which says to me, they're expecting them to play those kids a lot. And I'm sorry, but the likelihood of there being 15 kids in the North Carolina tri-state or tri-city region there to be able to compete at a League One level is incredibly low.
Well, that's good news for us because we're going to be playing them four times this season. So, considering the other four timers are going to be, I think, North Texas and Greenville, having that one to balance it out is going to be helpful.
Well, we'll see how that goes, but it sounds like that their thinking is more long game. We play in a system where there's no relegation, so they could take a couple of years to develop these players, so to develop a better product for down the road. We'll see if that pays off for them, but it may be a very a tough and tumble season so far.
All right. Well, real quick, let's do a Biggles Wade report. So our friends Biggles Wade United went 3-for-3 on the weekend. The under-23 reserves were winners. The Biggles Wade United won in the Gladwish Cup, which is a spring friendly that they've organized locally for the teams to be able to play some games now that COVID restrictions are done. And the on Sunday, the Biggles Wade United ladies victorious as well. So 3-for-3, way to go, Biggles Wade United. A happy birthday to Joshua Roberts Law, the commentator that does a lot of the streaming stuff for the club. He had a birthday. He was a guest on the Festivus Bonanza.
Yes.
So happy birthday, Joshua. Hope it was a great one. Raise a cider for Adam. And we also today, I haven't had any updates. I haven't been able to see what the results were, but we had a Biggles Wade Derby, boys.
Oh.
We had the Biggles Wade FC U23s and the Biggles Wade United U23s. So we don't know how that finished, but hope everything went well and you know, just spent most of the day daydreaming about the day when you and I and Adam will head out to Biggles Wade and we'll get to stand on the rail there and watch a Biggles Wade Derby.
That would be blessed.
So, So I'm going to give you that update on that Biggles White FC Reserve versus Biggles White United under 23. It went 4-0 to Biggles White FC Reserves.
All right.
Biggles FC. Wow. I know things are really getting exciting again in lower league soccer over in the UK, because for most of them, for the longest time, they haven't been able to play at all. And so this is good news. It's not quite back to normal, but it's certainly a breath of fresh air.
Indeed. All right. Well, thank you, everyone, for listening, as always. It may be a couple of weeks here before we finally do a opening game preview, or try to tell you a little bit about what's happened with their remaining preseason friendlies. And then we'll be back to, you know, having regular soccer chats as we go through the season.
All right.
Bye. We got to get this thing recorded because I've got biscuits to make. And that's not like any kind of euphemism. I'm actually making buttermilk biscuits.
My biscuits are burning.
So. Okay, so the way that we are envisioning this, Jeff, I'm gonna shout out Brandon Dean.
Brandon Dean!
I don't think that's what he meant.